I'd like to begin this morning by reading in Colossians chapter 1, verse 12, for the sake of time. Giving thanks, first chapter of Colossians, verse 12, giving thanks, this is the Apostle Paul writing to the saints at Colossae, giving thanks unto the Father, which hath made us meet, fit, to be partakers, a part of the inheritance of the saints in light. Now, one of the things that I want you to keep in the back of your mind as we consider these thoughts is who the apostle is writing to. Now, if you can remember back when you were in school, how many of you learned the names of the saints gathered at the church in Colossae? Anybody know who they were? Anybody know where the church was located? Have you ever seen the monuments erected with, or the tombstones with the people's names on them? They weren't very famous people, were they? The one who the Spirit of God took the time to write to, they weren't the ones who have huge monuments erected to them. I sort of think of the saints at Colossae as being just plain folk. Well, there's a couple. As you read this book, there's a few whose names have been recorded for eternity. Not on any stone that man has erected, but in the pages of this book. And therefore, for eternity, their names have been recorded. But for the most part, the saints at Colossae, they're dead and gone. Yet these incredible truths were revealed to these folks who just plain folks. Keep that in the back of your mind. I don't know how many of you have already got a monument erected. See, I've got a little liberty along those lines. There might be 10, 20, maybe 30 of you have already got these huge monuments where people come to pay to walk up inside and look around, and maybe you are quite famous. But the assembly where we attend on a regular basis, there isn't anybody there with monument. There might be a couple that have monument planned for when they're gone, but if these things were written to just plain folk, they are things that the rest of us just plain folk can enjoy as well. So the Apostle Paul says to these unknown saints at Colossae that the Father has made them meet, fit, to be partakers, to have their name included in the will of the inheritance of the saints. Now, I would imagine, Nashville being the place it is, that there's probably a plane flying overhead about now that's about to land at the airport. And I am such a big person that I'm sure that those people can see me even through the roof as they fly overhead. I'm so important and so big, and from that airplane, just a few hundred feet up in the air, they can see me, right? I'm sure they can. I mean, I'm important. I'm big. I take up a lot of space. Well, all things being relative, maybe from an airplane they couldn't see me. Matter of fact, I guess yesterday when we landed, when we flew over in our approach, I don't think I saw any people either. From just that far away. I used to work in New York City. And when friends would visit, I'd take them up to the top of the World Trade Towers. And the World Trade Towers are just square buildings of glass. Glass is maybe this thick. And you can go, well, you got to keep somebody employed. So if you put smudges on the windows, that gives somebody a job to have to come along and clean them. So I would go up and put my side of my face right up against the glass and look straight down just to make the window dirty. And I could see people. Well, I could see cars. Cars were about that big. From the top of World Trade Center. Imagine how big I look if you were standing on the moon. Or if you were circling the Earth in the space shuttle. Imagine how big that. You think God sees me? How big do you think I appear from the third heaven? I guess the reason, well, they're still discovering, you know, that you can go out now, they know, you can go 10 billion B light years. You can travel at the speed of light for 10 billion years and not get to the end of this universe that we are a part of. And Isaiah says that the heavens, well, they're just this canopy God throws over his throne. How big do you think I saw a picture recently of the universe taken from 10 billion light years away. And our galaxy is not even seen. It's too small to appear in the picture. And yet in the middle of that galaxy is this planet. And in the middle of this planet is me. Imagine how I appear from 10 billion light years away. But God, the Father, has made me fit to be a partaker of the inheritance. What's the inheritance of the saints? According to Ephesians, we are co-heirs, aren't we, with Jesus Christ. Me. Verse 13 says, who hath delivered us? Who's the who? Here's one of those stop and pause. Three letters in a word. Who? Who's who? Father. You know, the better we get to know someone, the more we get to appreciate them. When I first arrived at a place called Greenwood Hills, where my wife and I worked for a few years, one of the first times I spoke in that assembly, a man that was in his 80s at that time and had been fairly severely crippled by a stroke, had a very difficult time walking and even more difficult time speaking because words came very hard to him. You should have been in the car when he was driving. He came up to me after a meeting, and when he shook my hand, he put a $5 bill in my hand. Now, I had just come from a job in New York City, and, well, I thanked the man because my mother told me to be polite. But $5 when you came from New York City, you... But then as the time went by, I grew to know that man. And you know, that man who was then in his 80s had been all his life a barber. And for most of his life, he had cut hair for 5 cents, a haircut. And the more I got to know that man, the more I realized how little of this earth's goods he had. And the more I got to know how little this man of this earth's goods this man had, the more I began to appreciate what it meant for that man to put a $5 bill in my hand. A nickel, a haircut. I think when he was tired, it had gotten up to 75 cents. And that's what he had raised his family on. That's what he had saved for his retirement. And from that is what he was giving me, this $5. It got to a point where I was scared to death to shake this man's hand. Because I'd start bawling. Because I began to comprehend a little better what it meant to him to give me that gift. So with that in mind, I'd like to stop and consider this who. Because the more I learn of who this who is, the more I grow in my appreciation of the gift he gave me. Who? Well, I'm glad you asked. Turn back to Isaiah chapter 1. We don't have much time to spend here, but Isaiah, he must have been a favorite of God, you know? Because God really, he gave some incredible revelations to Isaiah concerning who he was. Isaiah chapter 1, that's the beginning of Isaiah's book, in case I had going past your thinking. Chapter 1's the beginning. So just in chapter 1, I just want to spend a moment skipping through chapter 1 to see some of these places where Isaiah gives us a little bit of an introduction into who this who is. That's found in verse 13 of chapter 1 of the book of Colossians. Let's see, verse 2 of Isaiah chapter 1. Hear, O heavens, all 10 billion light years of heavens. Hear, O heavens, give ear, O earth, for Jehovah hath spoken. This who of Colossians chapter 1 is Jehovah. Jehovah is the God to whom all the heaven listens. You remember on Mount Carmel, Elijah was saying to the prophets of Baal, speak up, boy. Your God can't hear you, it seems. Shout a little louder. Well, Baal, he might not be able to hear his servants, but Jehovah God is the one to whom all of the heavens listen. You remember Jehovah, that's the name that God gave to Moses to give to the children of Israel. He says, you're going to know me by that name. Abraham, he knew God by the name El Shaddai. The Almighty, the All-Sufficient One, able to do all things, able to meet all needs. That's who Abraham knew him by. El Shaddai, that's impressive, isn't it? El Shaddai. But the nation of Israel, they were going to know him as Jehovah. Jehovah means he who always was, he who always will be, he who always is. What does that mean? Well, in deep theological terms, it means He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He never changes. He always was. You know what? I'm not trying to insult you, but since you came in here this morning, you changed. I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but you've gotten older. You've actually aged. Not that you look it. But God hasn't changed. He hasn't gotten older. He always was. You know what Isaiah found out? The Lord Jesus is the Father of eternity. Chapter 9. The Father of eternity. Now, the Father means the creator of, right? I mean, if you're a father, you're the creator of the Son. I mean, you son's your offspring. Eternity, it has no beginning. There's a lot of fuss, at least in our country, now about this gene business. Our president, who probably doesn't know how to spell gene, he got on television and said that he was a big part of the discovery of this matching of a gene. Little wonder his vice president said he... Never mind. Man would love to create just one living cell. Oh, they think that if they could create one single living cell, that they would be like God. Creating living cells, that is nothing. Everything we create has a beginning. No man, even if they were to figure out how to create a living cell, no man will have ever created anything that hasn't had a beginning. Only the Lord Jesus could create something that has no beginning. Then, if you can create something that doesn't have a start, then you're beginning to be a creator. Creator of eternity. That's why, you see, if eternity had existed as long as the Lord, then eternity would be God as well. And there is no other God besides Jehovah God. Always was. Always will be. Always is. That's funny. I think I remember reading someplace, Jesus Christ, the same. Yesterday, today, forever. Why is that important? Does it matter much if we know that God doesn't change? We might consider it important about halfway through eternity to come. Because it'll be nice to know that at no point throughout the endless ages of eternity will God ever change his mind about whether or not I should be there. He will never get to the point where he says, well, you know, I learned something new about you I didn't know before, and you know, really, you don't quite measure up. I'm going to have to ask you to leave. I don't know. You sure have stretched the bounds of my love. I mean, my love is infinite, but there's a point. Maybe I don't love you anymore. You see, he's never going to say that. Because the way he felt about me before I was born, before my father was born, before my father's father was born, before my father's father's father was born, all the way back to Adam, even before he wasn't born. But before Adam, he loved me. And he will never change. his mind concerning me, because he is Jehovah. Now that's just the way Isaiah starts his book. That's only the way he starts his chapter. Skim down to, let's just go to verse 4. He brings it up again. They have forsaken Jehovah. Isaiah chapter 4, in the middle of the verse we read, they have forsaken Jehovah. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel. That's another glimpse of into the character, into the person of this who in verse 13 of chapter 1 of Colossians. The Holy One of Israel. Verse 9. Here's one of Isaiah's favorites. Verse 9. The Lord of hosts. Jehovah Sabaoth. Remember the servant? Who was it? Elijah? Elisha. They were surrounded by the armies of some wicked man, and the servant was really nervous. And so, after watching him squirm a little bit, the prophet says, "All right, Lord, open his eyes." And all of a sudden, he saw the host of Jehovah surrounding the host of the enemy. The Lord of hosts. That's the who of Colossians chapter 1 and verse 13. Verse 24 of Isaiah 1, one more, or two more, I guess, is there. Therefore saith the Lord of hosts, the mighty one of Israel. Now, the first Lord in that verse, you see, that's type different than the second Lord. That first Lord, that's Adonai, that's sovereign master, that's sovereign ruler, that's sovereign God, that's sovereign, that's in control of all things. Didn't we sing about that? In total control. That's the who of Colossians 1:13. Jehovah of hosts, the mighty one. The strong, the powerful. It's a word that's only used in relation to God himself in the Old Testament. The mighty one of Israel. That's just the first 24 verses of Isaiah. But you see, that begins to give you a little more appreciation of who the who is in Colossians chapter 1 and verse 13. Now that who is the one who delivered us from the power of darkness, translated us into the kingdom of the Son of His love. Oh, I like that term. We'll spend some time there this month. Son of His love. In whom, now this is a different whom than the who of Colossians, the first word in Colossians 1:13. This whom is the Son of His love, in whom we have redemption through His blood. Whose blood? His is the Son of His love. The Son of whose love? The Son of Jehovah. The Son of El Shaddai. The Son of Jehovah Sabaoth. The Son of Adonai. The Son of God. His blood. We have redemption through His blood. Even the forgiveness of sin. For God, the who of Colossians 1:13. God, Jehovah, Adonai, El Shaddai, Jehovah, God so loved the world. He gave. You see the thought? The more you begin to know something of the who, the more you begin to appreciate something of the gift. It's only a three-letter word. And sometimes maybe if we're quoting the verse and we're doing it quickly, we go past it without even saying it. Much less stop to think about who the who is. But the who of Colossians chapter 1 is someone that for the endless ages of eternity, because even though eternity, which has no beginning, was created by the Lord Jesus, it has no end. And throughout the endless ages of eternity, we will continue to grow in our understanding, our knowledge of who that who is. If we reach the point where we knew it all about him, some point, billions, a gazillion light years into eternity, well, then he wouldn't be an infinite God. But he is an infinite God. Is there any wonder the Apostle Paul was giving thanks to the Father? When we stop and think about who that who is, who that who gave, the value of the sacrifice, the value of the gift, and what it has done for us, redemption. The Holy One of Israel is now one we don't have to fear. We're in His presence now. Absolute holiness. And no fear of judgment. Remember Esther? I don't know how many of you wives might feel this way, but I can't go in to see my husband if he hasn't invited me. He might kill me. If he doesn't lift up his scepter, I'm dead meat. Don't ask me to go in without an invitation. That was just an old, dumb old king. He's dead and gone. This is a holy God. No sin can exist in His presence. And yet you and I are here this morning because in the gift of His Son, the Son of His love, He has made it possible for us to have redemption, even the forgiveness of sin. Or that we might be like the Apostle Paul and with the saints at Colossae, those very important, well-known saints of Christ. That big, thriving, populous church at Colossae. We might be able to thank the Father. And that the appreciation, the worship, the thanksgiving of our hearts might grow as we grow in our appreciation of who He is and what He has done for. It might possibly even be seen in our lives. Wouldn't that be something if we were so thankful that people who were spiritually blind would be able to see something of the living God in us? Because of how thankful we are to Him for what He has done for us. Wouldn't that be